Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Over the Monster podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined for episode 170 by my co-host this week, Matt Collins of Over the Monster. Matt, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Baseball doesn't seem as close as it actually is, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, we're just 12 days out as we're recording this on a Sunday, July 12th. On today's episode, we're going to be freestyling a little bit, talking a little bit about what we know has happened so far at camp, which has been sort of coming in trickles, some details. So we'll talk a little bit about that roster. We're going to hit more on the rotation because that seems to be where a lot of the question marks are for the Red Sox. And, you know, those question marks will probably persist for a lot of the year, considering this group is not ideal. And we'll get to all of your listener questions as well. But before we get started, just a little bit of housekeeping. If you've been listening to the podcast and enjoying the show, please go on, subscribe to the show, rate and review us on iTunes or anywhere you're listening to this podcast. We always do appreciate that. And I know that, you know, Keaton, Matt, myself, Shelley, Trevor, everybody who podcasts on this network would appreciate that. So we appreciate you. Our Twitter handles, I'm at Dev Jake, Matt is at Matt R.Y. Collins, and the Over the Monster site is at Over the Monster. So check us out there as well. So let's get right into it, Matt. We're going to do this a little bit different this week. We're going to kind of play off your listener questions right off the top because all of them had to do with what we were going to talk about anyways. Our first one comes from at Con Urban, and he said, what even is the rotation at this point? This is a really interesting question, and one that is not that simple at this point. I think the simplest thing is starting at the top of the rotation with Nathan Eovaldi And you wrote a piece this week, actually, on why Nathan Eovaldi is the most important player to the Red Sox this year. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because he's really the only one that seems to be locked in and actually performing well.
Yeah, so I mean, important can be kind of interpreted different ways. I mean, there's a fair argument to just say it's Devers or Bogarts or Martinez just because they're the best players and you need your best players to be good. But Eovaldi is like the guy that can go. I mean, his range of outcomes is just so huge. And I mean, we've seen him be outstanding in 2018. Which, I mean, I wrote about a little bit in that piece. That season's kind of gotten underrated a little bit from him, weirdly, because everybody just focuses on the postseason and kind of forgets that he was outstanding in the regular season, too. So we've seen him do that over a full season, or mostly a full season, with Tampa Bay and Boston that year. And then we've also obviously seen last year where injuries get the best of him, and just even when he's healthy, it's just not going well. So I mean, he has that huge range of outcomes, and he also happens to be in the worst portion of the roster. I mean, the rotation is just hot garbage, and even more so now with Eduardo Rodriguez testing positive for COVID. And I mean, like I said last week, I feel kind of gross even discussing that in terms of what it means for the roster, but unfortunately that's part of what we have to do. And I mean, we don't know when he's going to be back, so as of right now, Eovaldi is the number one pitcher in the rotation. So I mean, he can be good. He probably shouldn't be the number one pitcher in rotation even at his best, but he can be very good. So at this point, the Red Sox, I cannot see the Red Sox having a good season with Eovaldi being bad.
No, I can't either. And I think that if the Red Sox are going to unlock a good season, that requires Eduardo Rodriguez coming back from his illness, being effective, and then Eovaldi also being extremely effective. I have been intrigued, though, you know, looking at Eovaldi's stats over the last few years, even all the way dating back to like 2013. Eovaldi, obviously, he's pitched a lot of innings since then, had a lot of injuries, but he's also changed tremendously as a pitcher over that period of time. His swinging strike rate has gone up pretty much every single season, all the way dating back to 2013. It's actually at a pretty healthy like 10.6% last year, 10.7% in 2018 when he was really good. And the thing that kind of intrigues me about him, not only did he look good like me watching his outing on my cell phone in my living room, which actually means nothing, it's encouraging that he looked good there, but you know, the thing is that he seems to be refining his repertoire of pitches, figuring out what works for him as the years go on, becoming a smarter pitcher, and he's still carrying with him that super elite velocity that he has. He's using his cutter better, I think. There's a lot of things that he's doing now that I think he didn't do in his younger days. So he's one of these rare guys that I think, like, you know, maybe as he ages a little bit, he's 30 now. The stuff has always been not really the question. The stuff's always been there. It's kind of like how he's used it. And I think that we could see him take that next step forward, and it could look a lot like 2018, like you said.
Yeah, well, so the Yankees, when he was at the Yankees in 15 and 16, they had him stop throwing his cutter. And so he has, he said he's always had that big fastball, but that big fastball is extremely straight. I mean, it's just, he can't like blow that by players anymore. It's not 1972. So he needs that cutter, and he brought that cutter back in 2018, and that was really the difference. And then last year, he was still throwing the cutter, but he wasn't getting the swings on it. His swings on pitches out of the zone went way down last year, and with that, his walk rate went way up. So he's going to find a way to get batters to chase that cutter again. He's going to start it on the plate a little bit more. That cutter last year would just start just off the outside corner and then just go way outside, so nobody's swinging at it.
Right.
So, I mean, if he can get that walk rate back down to like 2.5 per nine or lower, I'll be very confident in him, but I mean, last year he was almost up at 5, so I mean, the cutter, I think, is just really the key to his whole repertoire at this point.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. And I remember that he was wearing one of those sleeves that measures torque on your arm, the one that Chris Sale was using as well before he started rehabbing, and he kind of found out something that he didn't know before, which was that his cutter, which he thought was causing a lot of the stress on his elbow, was actually not the most stressful pitch that he throws. So I think you could see him be a little bit more confident throwing that offering, knowing that it's not really hurting him to the same degree as maybe he thought he was. Because remember, he's a two-time Tommy John guy as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's the other thing that kind of is the elephant in the room with him. I mean, even in a shortened season, I guess injury risk goes down a little bit, but there's still a ton of injury risk with him, and you never know if his arm's just going to blow up one of these starts. But I mean, as of right now, like he looked great in March before the shutdown. He's looked outstanding since they've come back in camp, by all reports. So, I mean, I just remember 2018. That cutter was, I mean, guy throws a 97 mile an hour cutter, whatever it is, 95 mile an hour cutter. It's unhittable as long as he's locating it well. So, he can be. He has the potential to be very, very good.
Yeah, he does. And sticking on a positive note, I want to move on to the next guy in the rotation here. Not numerically, but Ryan Weber actually has secured a rotation spot for the Red Sox. And he's done that basically by how he's looked since the shutdown happened, and then also what he did in the spring. In 9 innings in the spring, Weber didn't give up a single run, struck out 11 batters. He's done kind of a lot to show this Red Sox, you know, staff here and Ron Renneke that, like, this guy's ready to go. He doesn't have completely overpowering stuff. He's just kind of like a steady Eddie type pitcher out there. But at this point, like, we will take steady in having a game plan, which is something that I'm confident he has. I don't know how good it'll be, but I mean, at this point, like, he's a valuable piece in the Red Sox rotation plans.
Is he? I don't know about that. I think
well, we're there, you know.
Well, like, I think it says a lot more about the roster than Ryan Weber. I mean, he was. You mentioned those stats; they're very good. But also, there's spring training. Baseball Reference has they rate the quality of opponents that pitchers face in spring training, and his average opponent, talent wise, was somewhere in between a double A and triple A player. So I mean, I don't know how telling those stats are. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's better than him getting shelled, I guess. But it's,
yeah,
he's been around for a long time. He's about 30 years old. He's just never been very good. So he's definitely in the rotation. If I had this roster in front of me, I'd definitely put him in there too. But I'm not swimming in confidence. And I mean, I wrote about this, I don't know what it was, last week, 2 weeks ago, about piggybacking. But it just, looking at all these names, all these extremely mediocre names for these last 3 or 4 spots, depending on how you feel about Martin Perez, I don't feel confident in any of them going more than like 3 or 4 innings. I would just get like a group of like 6 or 7 guys and just throw them up each out there for like 3 or 4 innings at a time and just see if that works. Because I really don't trust. I don't want to have to rely on Ryan Weber going at least 5 or 6 innings every 5 days. That just does not seem like a winning plan.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And ideally, like, Ryan Weber on a good baseball team that is injury and illness free is like your 7th starter, like, you know, depth that you can call on at some point. Yeah, exactly. This is exactly the AAA type. If you want to dig into anything favorable from last year in his stats, very low walk rate, under 2/9, and his FIP was actually 4.20. His FIP, I should say. Yeah, not his ex-FIP. I'm looking at his FIP. It was 4.20 last year, which I think could be kind of like a best-case scenario. If you get a 4.20 ERA out of Ryan Weber this year, I think you're thrilled with that, if he can pitch to his FIP.
For sure, especially given the run environment last year. 4.20, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would assume that's better than league average.
Yeah, I would assume so as well. And I'm not optimistic that he can do that, but I also think that the plan that you're talking about piggybacking guys is one that's going to be really interesting, and one that I almost think that Heim Bloom is planning on more than the traditional opener role, because I'm not sure that the Red Sox roster really has that long guy, but they do have a bunch of guys that they could throw out there for multiple innings. Jeffrey Spring has been a guy who's gotten multi-inning starts. Colton Brewer routinely went like 1 to 2 plus innings last year. Marcus Walden can do that. Josh Osich can do that. Matt Hall can do that. Chris Mazza can do that. Mike Schwarin can do that. So
and you even get you down
can
to
use
like,
a bunch yeah, of those guys.
Yeah, and you even get down to the younger guys too. I mean, some of them aren't on the roster, but they still have 10 spots that can be added. But I mean, you get down to like Tanner Houck, maybe even Brian Mata if you're feeling good about him, Daniel McGrath, Kyle Hart, just a way to ease those guys in and maybe let their talent play up a little bit. They have a terrible group of pitchers, so they gotta be creative if they're gonna get any bit of value out of it.
Yeah, and I think I was listening to the Sox Prospects podcast last week, and they made an interesting point too that, you know, some of these guys, like a Marcus Walden, if he goes out and he's pitching well, maybe Renicky lets him go like 4 to 5 innings, and then they just option him and get him back here in 10 days too. And I think they have a whole group of guys that it would be pretty easy for them to use them interchangeably in that way, and it wouldn't drastically affect the roster if they had to disappear for like 10 days at a time if they gave them a good outing.
I think Walden's a late inning guy on this team.
I agree that Walden is one of the best relievers on the team, but like if he's rolling in a win in a short season, I don't think you mess with that.
No, but I wouldn't have him out early in a game to begin with personally. Especially with Darwin's and Hernandez and Josh Taylor also testing positive, you never know when they're going to be out. I wouldn't want to waste him early in a game. I could see them putting him in that role just personally. If I was in charge, he would be doing that.
Sure. I mean, I totally get that because looking at the setup, man, I mean, we feel good about Workman and Barnes, but I feel terrible about Hembree. No idea what I'm getting from Brazier. Bryce, I don't know.
He weirdly looks good in spring. Good. Yeah, I feel weirdly good about Brazier and Bryce a little bit. I'm up on
You've
this
talked yourself into this bullpen.
Yeah, I totally have. I felt a lot better about it if Darwin's and Hernandez and Josh Taylor are healthy. But even with the group now, I mean, I love Workman and Barnes, and I like Walden, and I like Brazier. I like Bryce. I think they can make something work.
Yeah, and I think my overwhelming point here with this bullpen is that, like, after those back two of Workman and Barnes, you could say that there's probably a second group of Darwinson and Josh Taylor. You'd put Walden in that group?
Yeah.
I would put good Walden in that group. I'm not positive that I would feel confident classifying him in that group talent-wise.
He's different than them.
He is. And if you remember, like, last year, I was a Walden guy, and I've been a Walden guy. I believe in what he does. You know what I'm saying? It just looks a little bit different.
Yeah, he's not like the totally overpowered
Hernandez.
Yeah. He's not striking out 12 guys for 9, for sure.
Exactly. He looks, honestly, he looks like a starter, a failed starter who's out there pitching well in relief.
That's what he is.
If that makes any sense. Exactly. You know, but like, he exactly looks that part. You know, he doesn't have the overwhelming stuff, like you said. But that whole back end, the bullpen is going to be playing into this rotation in a big way. I do want to talk about Martin Perez a little bit, a lefty, 29 years old, a guy who I kind of had some hopes for because he was working on a new pitch. I don't know whether he's not been throwing that new pitch or whether he's just still not getting results.
Is the new pitch the cutter from last year?
Yeah, the cutter that he started throwing last year, and he started having a bunch of success with it, but he has looked like junk so far early in camp. They were kind of teeing off on him, but also, I don't know what he's throwing. I don't know what to make of that. You know, I'm trying not to overreact to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I could care less what he has done in camp, but I have zero confidence in Martin Perez. I just don't think he's very good. I mean, I know that he got that weak contact a lot last year, but he's just frankly never been good as a major leaguer. And even with the weak contact last year, it didn't work. He doesn't, if you're giving up weak contact, you have to at least pair that with a lot of strikeouts or very few walks, because if not, you're just letting a lot of balls in play and you're putting a lot of batters on for free. And when you let a lot of balls in play, I don't care how weak the contact is, you're going to get burned. And that's just what's happened to him his entire career. So I would be thrilled to be wrong, but I have zero hope. Pretty much zero hope for Martin Perez.
Well, I mean, history is definitely on your side, man. 435 innings over the last 3 years. He has a 5.21 ERA.
Yeah, I mean,
good.
I mean, if you look at DRA, which isn't the end-all be-all, but it, if I have to pick one metric, that's probably where I am. He's been below replacement level each of the last five seasons. He's been at least one win below replacement level each of the last 4 years. He's been 30% worse than league average, or at best, over the last 5 years. It's just, he just hasn't been good.
No, he really hasn't. And I think it would be quite a surprise and probably a bit of a stretch to think that this pitch is going to be the thing that drastically changes everything for him.
The bit of hope would be that, I mean, sometimes these adjustments, I mean, the pitches, he started throwing it last year. Sometimes this stuff takes a little bit of time and a little bit of tweaking to make work. So, I mean, there's that possibility. If you're trying to hang your hat on something, that's where it would be.
Yeah, I'm not sure if even the most optimistic person would think that all of a sudden there's going to be a massive change.
I think you got to hope for league average. I mean, that would be ideal. That's great. A ceiling.
I mean, if Martin Perez pitches to a 4.4, 4.5 ERA, we have hit the jackpot, I think.
Take that and run.
Yeah, and also because he's a volume guy, too, which is one of the reasons why I think they signed him for this. It does look like Brian Johnson, also, with all of the things going on here, a guy who can go multiple innings, a guy who has looked good in the past. I mean, we know the limitations of Brian Johnson's stuff, but it does seem like he is likely to be added. He was a non-roster invitee, but it does look like he's going to be added to the 40-man.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I would assume he makes it. I mean, the thing, just the overwhelming takeaway from all of these guys is just they all give up a lot of contact. And I don't know that the Red Sox defense is good enough to be using that as a strategy. I mean, the Red Sox don't really have a choice at this point. But, I mean, the Red Sox defense can be solid, but I don't think it's anything to write home about.
Yeah, I think the outfield defense is really good. I'm very confident in the idea of a Benintendi, JBJ, Verdugo outfield. I think they'll catch most.
I think there's a little bit of an adjustment for Verdugo. Right field at Fenway is bizarre. So there might be a little bit of an adjustment there. But yeah, the outfield I'm not super worried about. It's more the infield.
Yeah, it's more the left side of the infield, I think, is my big concern. Are you concerned about second base? Because I think that Peraza, who I expect to play a lot there, and Chavis actually looked okay there. I'm not too concerned about second base.
I would assume they're going to shift enough where it's not that huge of a deal.
What do you expect from Devers this year defensively? Because I think we all expect this bat to be, you know, Devers level. Awesome. He had 90 extra base hits last year, but do you think his defense continues to take a step forward?
No, I think we probably saw the best last year. I think he'll definitely be passable. I don't think we're going to be talking about him moving across the diamond or anything, but I think he's a little bit below average defensively. I think that's just where he settles in.
Yeah, and he was better, if I recall, going to his left last year than he was going to his right. So little things like that. I mean, we've seen it happen in the past where Major League Baseball players playing third base specifically because it is a position that, you know, with a little bit of positioning and a little bit of studying, you can actually improve yourself quite a bit through that practice. It's not maybe as athletic as a few of the up the middle positions are. I think you have to have quick motions and things like that, and a cannon arm, and Devers certainly has a cannon arm, but I think there is some reason to expect that as he gets older, as long as he's keeping his body in shape, that he can make maybe incremental improvements over there.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I think he can stay there for a long time. I just don't think he's going to – I don't see him taking a step. Last year, I think he was actually a little bit above average. So that's why I said I don't think he's going to take a step forward. But I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, definitely passable. One other thing – I guess a couple other notes that I want to make as we're kind of running through our camp notes here. Su Weilin, surprisingly, got a little time at first base. Now, this is interesting because Su Weilin is a guy who I feel like this could be the last year that he's with the Red Sox because he's out of options, and also because I think they really want to carry Jonathan Arroz, and I'm not sure what they're going to do in terms of carrying catchers, how many of those they're going to carry. So I think that he could be a potential guy to be DFA'd or waived. I'm not sure which it would be for him. I think it would be DFA'd. Yeah. What are they trying to do here by adding a little bit more versatility to Su Weilin? Because it does seem like he's played pretty much everywhere on the diamond now.
Yeah, I mean, it just catcher. It doesn't hurt to be able to play more positions. I think that's pretty much all it comes down to. Brock Holt played first base, too. So he's kind of just filling into that role, I would say. Especially this season with the virus going around, you've got to have plans F, G, H. I mean, you've got to have all these crazy backup plans. So you feel like Su Weilin's a guy who is comfortable at any position. You make sure that he's comfortable at any position because you never know where you're going to need to play guys.
I wouldn't be shocked if they were able to pass him through waivers either.
No, that wouldn't be too shocking to me, although I could also see a team take a chance on him. He was a solid hitter not all that long ago, and he is athletic, and I mean, he can play. He plays all over the place like Brock Holt, and he's better defensively than Brock Holt by a pretty significant margin.
Yeah, no, he's a great
obviously
defender.
Can't hit like Brock Holt, but yeah, defensively he's very, very good.
Yeah, I'd feel totally confident with him subbing in at short or second, even center in the outfield. Yeah, totally agree. Bobby Dalbec, though, we're talking about first baseman. Bobby Dalbec has reported to camp. He did have COVID. He's feeling fine now. That is a legitimate option for this season. And I've kind of changed my tune on Dalbec. I think I'd be shocked if we don't see him for substantial time this season.
Yeah, the only thing is, I don't know if he's gotten to Fenway yet. I know he was working out at BC, so I don't know if that'll hold back his clock to play on opening day or anything. But yeah, I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't be. The only reason he wouldn't get significant time is if Moreland and Chavis both are hitting extremely well.
I'm just not sure how much Moreland's got left.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I would expect it. I'm just saying that would be the reason.
Yeah. No, I agree. I totally agree. And I kind of think that Moreland is there as much for his leadership as he is for his baseball prowess at this point.
Yeah, I think he's going to get a lot of time against righties to start the year. I think he's going to have to play himself out of regular playing time.
So you do think he gets more time than you think he gets the strong side of that platoon pretty much the whole season?
Yeah, I think he's going to put – well, I think that's the plan at least. If he scuffles, I think they'll change course fairly quickly. I don't think he's going to have a super long leash. But yeah, I think the plan would be for him to play something like 85% of the time against righties, and then Chavis will play some second base, splitting time with Peraza against righties, and then when there's a lefty, it would be Chavis and Peraza on that side of the infield.
I got to ask you, with Chavis's struggles against the fastball last year, can you envision a scenario where it's actually Chavis who ends up getting sent down, Bobby Dalbec getting called up in his place, and Peraza playing every day at second?
I guess. I'm much higher on Chavis than you are. But
yeah,
players have come back from struggling against fastballs. It's not like he's could never recover from that. So I'm fairly confident in him being a really solid hitter, I've always liked Chavis's bat. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely not impossible. He has the kind of profile that can kind of cave in on itself fairly quickly.
Yeah, I'm worried. I've seen him take a lot of bad swings.
Too. I mean, let's not act like Dalbec. He's a big swing and miss guy too, and there's absolutely no guarantee that those adjustments from last year hold on.
Yeah, and part of me being more confident in Dalbec right now than Chavis might just be the fact that I've seen a lot more Chavis. You know, that could be it for sure. What I was encouraged by with Dalbec last year is that he cut his K rates substantially. 25.1% in AA, 23.6% in AAA. That's good because the average kind of percentage points that we see move up when players reach the big leagues, right around 5%. So if he's going to be around a 30% strikeout guy, you know, he needs to obviously tap into his power, which we've seen him do in the minor leagues, but also he needs to be able to get to fastballs and breaking balls. And I have noticed in the time that I have watched Bobby Dalbec that even though he swings through a lot of stuff, he seems to be able to hit good pitching. So I'm curious, I know you've seen him a few times, in Portland as well. What are your thoughts on Dalbec's chances kind of to succeed at the big league level with his current approach?
Yeah, so I didn't see him last year, so it's kind of hard to say that. I've seen him a couple times, and I don't really want to judge it because I'll be honest, he was terrible. Every time I've seen him, he was just couldn't do anything with breaking balls, but I mean, I think I just saw him on bad days. I certainly haven't seen him enough to pretend I'm any sort of expert. So I mean, people have been legitimately encouraged by the adjustments he made last year, so I wouldn't totally write him off. The only sort of counter to that I would make is that we saw the same thing with Mike Chavis the year before, and then he came back and struggled. So long term, I think I'm more confident in Dalbec long term than I am in him coming up right away, just because for those swing and miss guys, that initial adjustment period can be pretty rough, and when it's only a 60 game season, that initial adjustment period is the entire season pretty much.
Yeah, sure is. Not a lot of time for these guys to work on things and get going.
But Chavis, I mean, back to him, he, if you remember his season last year, he was incredible when he first came up. The adjustment period came later for him, so I mean, that could easily happen with Dalbec too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, could see that. We did get another question kind of talking about the short season here. We got a question from Jason Gallagher who says, thoughts on how JBJ could be a real force this year? Considering the hot as hell streak he goes on, a 60-game season could lead to some crazy outlier numbers for him, or he could have three hits the whole season in a cold streak. I stay optimistic. Hashtag JBJ for MVP. Thank you for that question. This is maybe one of the more interesting players. I don't know. I'm going to rank him top five most interesting storylines on the Red Sox because we have seen him have, I believe it was like, what, it was a 33 or 35 game hit streak for Jackie Bradley Jr. Do you remember that like 2 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. He's had a bunch of those.
Bananas.
Yeah. So, a couple weeks ago, I went through everybody on the roster and tried to find their best and worst 60-game stretches of their career. And Bradley was, I don't know, I think Mitch Moreland's was actually a little bit more of a difference than his, but I mean, Bradley was, I have in front of me, his best streak was in 2016. He had 315, 391, 591, and then his worst streak was in 2014. He had 197, 262, 275. So, I mean, those are obviously just totally different ends of the spectrum, but yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of people ask me about Bradley and just like that sort of phenomenon in general. I just don't know how to predict a player other than how I would over a full season.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Bradley's going to be, I think Bradley's true talent is around like a 95 WRC plus in that sort of range. So, I mean, that's what I would expect just because that's who I think he is. Obviously, the error bars are huge. And he could go wildly in any direction, but if I had to pick a number, it would be in that range.
Yeah, I'd also lean conservative for him in terms of his numbers because I just don't think he's that good of a hitter. I guess a broader question that I would have for you is, do you think that pitchers or hitters are going to have the advantage early on, kind of getting started again with this shortened season? Because I tend to think that it's going to be pitchers who have the advantage over hitters early on.
If you had asked me a couple weeks ago before everyone reported, I would have said hitters pretty easily. But, I mean, I'm just straight up wrong about that. Every player that's been asked has said that pitchers are ahead. Pitchers have done a better job than I would have expected with staying ready in during that hiatus. I just didn't really know how a pitcher would have been able to kind of balance things out with their workload during the hiatus, but apparently they've done very well, because everybody that's been asked on the Red Sox has said that pitchers are way ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know that hitters do say that it takes a couple weeks for them to really get their timing, so it might be a little bit harder to replicate for hitters,
especially with no
when
games.
You're working out in cages.
I mean, these exactly intra-squad games are something, but it's not even like, I mean, it's a step below even spring training.
Yeah, I'd agree. There's just not a lot of quality reps going around for hitters. And that could be another factor that, you know, limits a lot of the younger players for the Red Sox. It is worth noting, too, with the Red Sox roster, how they haven't added any of the prospects yet. There's still significant space, and I know they've talked about adding Downs and Duran and a few of these guys, but when do you expect that to happen? Because time's kind of running out.
This week, I think Pete Abe, I'll try and find it so I have good proper credit, but I'm pretty sure it was Pete Abe, said that they were going to meet tomorrow to talk about filling in these last 10 spots. Yeah, Sox will meet tomorrow to discuss additions to the 60-man. So they have 50 on there right now. My assumption is that they're talking to some free agents, and so they don't want to add like a Tristan Casas or something, only to have to take him off, because you can't take somebody off. You have to put them through waivers and all that, and obviously you don't want to do that with the top prospects. So I'm assuming they're talking to the Clay Buchholzes of the world and all these fringe starters that are out there. And so once they figure out what will happen with that, then I would expect by the middle of this week that 60-man will be full.
Man, anything to get a Clay Buchholz reference in, huh?
He's the best starter available on free agency. Say what you want about the guy, but it's him or Andrew Kashner. You can take your pick.
I don't know. We did get a listener question from Sox Junkie who says, now that A-Rod's return is delayed, is Aaron Sanchez worth a roll of the dice? Not totally sure if he's healthy.
He's not.
I'd love to see him get a shot if the Sox could afford him and stay under the luxury tax. Curious to hear your thoughts. Didn't he have shoulder surgery?
Yeah, that's the issue with Aaron Sanchez. I would love for the Red Sox to take a shot at Aaron Sanchez. I wrote about free agents, and he was somebody I mentioned, but that would be a longer-term play. He might be able to return for like the last couple weeks of the year. But he's recovering from surgery, so yeah, he's not an option for like right away. So I mean,
shoulders.
Yeah, talent wise, he's better. He's obviously better than Buchholz or Kashner. He can't pitch right now.
Yeah, I have to admit, I did listen to the podcast that you did with Keaton, and you're geeking out pretty hard on some Clay Buchholz and what 60-game Clay Buchholz could look like.
Like you were just talking about Ryan Weber's spring training stats, so. I think I get a pass on talking about Clay Buchholz actually doing it in the majors.
I just love the enthusiasm.
I like Clay Buchholz. I've always been a Clay Buchholz guy.
Yeah, hey, you know, he's nice and our guys.
He's our moist, damp friend. Always soaking wet.
Yeah, Jesus. Okay. All right, so next question comes from Jackson Posey. And this is a weird one, people, so buckle up. He says, you get a knock at the door. It's a door-to-door plunger salesman who bears a striking resemblance to a certain Red Sox player. Which player's doppelganger is most likely to convince you to buy a superfluous plunger? I wonder why you picked plunger, first of all, out of, like, anything you could sell. Never had a door-to-door salesman with a plunger, but...
So we're just going off looks, right? This has nothing to do with personality. Just a doppelganger.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it just looks like who has the most trusting face on this roster,
or who? I mean, this is going to sound mean, but who do you think has the most experience with a plunger? I guess would be that's the way I interpreted the question. I don't feel super comfortable answering that, but that's how I think that's what he was going for with this question.
Who has the most experience with a plunger? See, that would not be where my head goes if someone's at my door trying to sell me a plunger.
My brain is broken, so.
Can I just get out of the way, like, who I would not buy a plunger from, first of all, is Heath Hembree. Like, anything that Heath Hembree tried to sell me, I would not buy.
That's fair.
He just doesn't have the face of someone who looks kind and inviting. So I wouldn't.
Pretty harsh, but I don't know that I disagree with it.
Yeah, I mean, just calling it as it is, okay?
Michael Chavis was my thought, just because he's like, but I can't, like, separate the personality.
Yeah, Michael Chavis does have that goofy, like, that smile. Boyish,
like that little kid vibe. It's like just a like nice that. Guy.
I mean,
Bogarts.
Devers.
JD Martinez looks like kind of like a professional salesman. He's got like that clean clean cut, just like extremely attractive face.
Yeah, he looks put together. You know,
he's a good looking guy.
Yeah, it's really hard not to do this with the personality part too, like you said, but Devers' face is just so enthusiastic.
I feel like that's what the asker was going for, so I was trying to avoid that one. But I mean, any question like this, the answer is always Devers. It's just how it goes. I was just trying to avoid the answer that we all know is the only real answer.
Yeah, that's fair. Some guys on this list, though, that would be just way too intense. Like, you imagine Chris Sale showing up to your house with a plunger.
I would call the authorities.
Yeah, you'd have to.
Very scared.
Yeah, just a few guys.
Tristan Casas, really out of place. He's 12 feet tall.
Giant.
Yeah. I'll buy whatever you want. Just please leave me alone. Don't hurt me.
I think Workman and Barnes would fall into that category too. Just like big, scary looking dudes. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm much more likely to buy something from an infielder. Let me just say that.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, except for a first baseman, because I mean Mitch Moreland's a big guy too.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to an intimate type item like the plunger,
I want to feel safe.
You want to have some trust. Yeah, exactly. Oh man, that's where we've gotten to with this offseason. So, almost over. I guess before we get out of here, we're going to make this one a little bit shorter than usual. But do you have any last closing thoughts on anything going on with this roster as we kind of head into the last few days, really? I mean, it's really not that much time. We'll podcast one more time before opening day.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest, I am still not in the mode that I'm ready for the season, not even in like a doom and gloom. I don't think it's going to happen. Just my brain has not, I don't think, processed that the season's about to start. So I'm not in that mode yet for whatever reason. I think this week I'll probably get into it.
Yeah, that's very fair. I have a couple baseball drafts. I'm still trying to do the fantasy thing that are coming up towards the end of this upcoming week. So I think that'll kind of get me into the mode again. I'm excited for it to get started, but I'm really scared for all the health concerns. But, you know, at the end of the day, my boyish enthusiasm about having baseball back is probably gonna carry me through these next 12 days.
Hey, listen, I don't think they should be playing, but I'm going to watch every game and I'm going to enjoy watching it.
Yeah, baseball's the best, man. Yeah. All right, well, thank you again for joining us and tuning in today. Again, you can find us on anywhere you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, anything like that. Please go on, rate, review us, subscribe to us. We do appreciate that. And again, you can find us on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt R.Y. Collins. You can find me at Dev Jake. You can find Keaton at The Spoken Keats. And you can find the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. So thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll be with you next week.